Welcome to episode 58 of Paws, Claws and Wet Noses, the vet podcast celebrating all creatures, great and small, and the fantabulous professionals who look after them all. I'm your show host, Julie South. Last week, we debunked 11 employment law myths. Today, we're going to look at constructive dismissal. Sometimes things seem to come in batches, and starting about 5 weeks or so ago, we started noticing here at VetStaff an uptake in vets and nurses calling us, wanting to help them find their next job because they felt like they were being pushed out of their current one. Maybe there's something in the water at the moment, because this is something we're starting to hear about more often, which is sad. Today, we're going to talk about constructive dismissal as it applies under New Zealand employment law. And if you follow us on Facebook, you may remember the updates we did there on constructive dismissal. Today, we're going to look at what it is, what conditions need to be met for the employment court or the tribunal to confirm constructive dismissal took place, two questions that need to be answered, what remedies are available, a couple of examples of constructive dismissal that have been upheld in court, and then, but wait, there's more. We're going to give you a top-level overview of what the requirements are for a personal grievance or not, and what workplace bullying could look like.
An old vet told my father when he was a student in Glasgow, he said, if you want to be a success in veterinary practice, just keep the bowels open and trust the rest to God.
Nutrition's not an opinion, it's a science.
They called me that weird herbal needle vet, and I just remember thinking, well, I'm still going to do it, because I know it works, and I've got the research to back it.
From reminiscences of the real James Herriot's son, to pet nutrition, to acupuncture, the Vet Podcast discusses current animal health issues from around the world. I'm veterinarian Brian Greger from New Zealand. Just search for the Vet Podcast wherever you get your podcasts from.
Paws, Claws and Wet Noses is sponsored by VetStaff. If you've never heard of VetStaff, it's New Zealand's only full-service recruitment agency 100% dedicated to the veterinary sector. VetStaff has been around since 2015 and works nationwide, from Cape Reinga to the Bluff and everywhere in between. As well as helping Kiwis, VetStaff also helps overseas qualified veterinarians find work in Aotearoa, New Zealand. VetStaff.co.nz. First up, what is constructive dismissal? Well, there are situations when an employer's action or inactions, singular or plural, make the situation in a vet clinic so intolerable that the employee feels that they've got nothing else to do but resign. When this happens, it could be considered a constructive dismissal. Constructive dismissals can be subject to a personal grievance, and we'll get into that later. There are three broad categories of constructive dismissal. The first one is the employer gives an employee a choice between resigning or being dismissed. In other words, it's a bit of a jump before we push you type of scenario. The second one is the employer deliberately acts in a way aimed at pressuring the employee to resign. This can be direct or indirect, covert or overt. And the third one, the employer has acted so badly by breaching the employment agreement or treating the employee highly unfairly that the employee feels he or she cannot remain in the job. If you find yourself in this situation, the first thing to do, as horrible as this sounds, the first thing to do is raise it with your practice manager, your head vet, your head nurse, or someone else with a view to working through the matter according to the dispute procedure detailed in your individual or your collective employment agreement. keep in mind that it's not necessary for the employer to want the employee to resign. However, there are two questions which need to be considered. And the first one is, did the employer's actions or inactions cause the employee to resign? And was the resignation foreseeable? A constructive dismissal does not need to be the result of a single event. It could be the result of a series of actions or inactions by the employer. Further, not all conduct and or requests by an employer that upset an employee will be enough to lead to a constructive dismissal. Which means just because an employee is upset with requests or conduct of his or her employer doesn't mean it will be enough for a constructive dismissal claim. For example, just because you might be unhappy about being given a lawful and reasonable request to do a task that you don't normally do, it could be that you've been asked to clean out or set up when someone else usually does that. When this happens, it doesn't mean that you can use it as a reason to resign and claim constructive dismissal. Another example could be when an employee resigns to avoid an upcoming performance management process or disciplinary meeting. If this happens, it's unlikely to be the grounds for a constructive dismissal claim, unless the process is a clear abuse of the employer's powers or undertaken for an improper purpose. So what remedies do you have available? One of them is the employee could take a personal grievance, also known as a PG, against the employer. This is when an employee who believes they've been constructively dismissed, they could raise a PG for unjustified dismissal and make a claim. The claim could be, for example, lost remuneration, humiliation, loss of dignity, and injury to feelings. Of course, it could also be a whole bunch of other things as well. When it comes to personal grievances, timing is absolutely critical. And just be aware, if you are in the first 90 days of a new job and you are in a trial clause, you cannot take a personal grievance against the employer in the 90-day trial period. Just so you know, the grievance must be raised within 90 days beginning on the date on which the action causing the grievance happened or first came to the employee's attention. Because many constructive dismissal cases involve the cumulative effect of actions happening over long periods of time, this 90-day limitation period is critical. If left too late, you may find that you're unable to take action and there's no opportunity to lodge a PG claim. If you find yourself thinking about taking a personal grievance after you've tried chatting with someone at your clinic first, which has gotten nowhere, then I highly recommend that you either go down the mediation route or you speak with an employment lawyer first. They'll be able to tell you whether you have a claim and whether your timing is good. Now, here are a few examples of successful constructive dismissals that have been upheld by either the Employment Relations Authority or the Employment Court. One upheld was when an employee had been maliciously assigned unpleasant or unproductive work to do. Another was when the case of an employee who worked excessive hours under a lot of stress. Also upheld was when an employer repeatedly failed to pay the employee's wages, which is obviously against the law. Another example of something upheld, or a PG case being upheld, constructive dismissal being upheld, was when employers move employees from permanent contracts to casual ones and where the employees could no longer provide for themselves because they weren't earning enough. And similar to going from permanent work to casual work, another upheld case was when an employer drastically reduced an employee's hours without getting the employee's agreement first. Now let's look at personal grievances, PGs. This is when an employee can raise a PG if they believe their employer has acted unfairly or unreasonably towards them. Personal grievances are covered by Section 103 of the Employment Relations Act 2000. Employees, including those in a triangular employment situation, which I'll explain a bit later, can bring a personal grievance for the following complaints: unjustified dismissal, unless the dismissal took place while the employee was on a valid 90-day trial period; unjustifiable action which disadvantages the employee; discrimination, sexual harassment, racial harassment; duress over membership of a union or other employee organization; an employer's failure to comply with obligations relating to continuity of employment for employees affected by restructuring; disadvantage to an employee due to the employment agreement not meeting legal requirements, for example, agreed hours of work, availability provisions, reasonable notice periods to be given before cancellation of a shift, reasonable compensation to be paid if a shift is cancelled, and secondary employment provisions. Can also include unfair treatment of an employee who has lawfully refused to work in certain circumstances, where an employer engages in adverse conduct for a prohibited health and safety reason in relation to an employee, or tries to force or persuade an employee not to perform a function, exercise a power, or undertake a role under the Health and Safety at Work 2015 Act. Where an employer or former employer takes retaliatory action against an employee who has made a protective disclosure or of information. Where an employer does not agree to protecting an employee's employment while the employee is participating in reserve forces service or training. And where an employer compels a shop employee, so this is retail, to work on Easter Sunday, or treats a shop employee adversely because they refuse to work on Easter Sunday. Let's look at what a triangular relationship is, because I'm going to be talking about that a little bit today. A triangular relationship is where someone is working somewhere on behalf of a third party. For example, if you were a VetStaff employee, now you have to be an employee of us or another agency, as opposed to being an independent contractor, and we seconded you, say, into a longish assignment at a clinic. There are three parties involved then. There's the locum, you, the clinic, and the labour hire provider, that's us. So that's where triangular situations come into play. A disadvantaged employee can include someone who has been given a warning, suspension, or demotion, has had hours of work or pay changed without consultation, has been underpaid, has been misled by their employer, not had the opportunity to respond to allegations against them, not had a safe workspace, or not been informed about proposals which may affect their employment. If you want to raise a personal grievance claim, there are various ways in which you could do that. Firstly, it's best to start off amicably. Raise the situation with your employer. Doing this means that bridges are less likely to be burnt down and the relationship can hopefully remain positive. It's a good idea to put something in writing to the employer to tell them about your personal grievance and request a meeting to resolve the issue. The employee must clearly state what their complaint is and the reasons why they believe that they have a grievance. It is best practice to do this in a letter or email to make sure that everything that needs to be included is included and you can present your case. If you're the employee, you must give enough detail about the problem to your employer to respond to the issues. As an aside, if you think things are going to turn pear-shaped at your clinic and you see a constructive dismissal or a personal grievance possibility on your horizon, start taking notes. Keep records, dates, places, times, who said what, when, and to whom. So if you think it's likely that you could end up taking a PG, or you're going to be fired, you're going to be asked to jump before you're pushed, start taking notes. The employee should keep a copy of the letter or the email for reference. If you're the employee and you raise the grievance verbally, then both the employer and you should take notes of what was said in case there's a dispute later. If an employee doesn't raise the grievance early enough or in enough detail, it may mean that they're unable to take legal action. The parties could either try to resolve the issues between themselves or have the meeting attended by a mediator. Mediators are available from they're free from the Employment Mediation Service, or you can hire a private mediator. MB, the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, manages the free mediation service. And like I said, you don't need a lawyer to go to mediation. Mediation is where an independent person, called a mediator, helps an employee and an employer resolve an employment relationship problem in a semi-formal and confidential environment. They are trained professionals. If you want to go to mediation, but you're not comfortable talking to your employer first, or anyone else in your organization, because of the type of the behavior, which could be bullying or discrimination or harassment, or the person you're complaining about, you'll be able to apply directly for mediation. PGs need to be made through the Employment Relations Authority. The ERA, Employment Relations Authority, is an independent organization that sits below the Employment Court. And the ERA's process is more formal than mediation, but less formal than the Employment Court. The ERA helps to resolve employment relationship problems by looking into the facts and making a decision based on the merits of the case, not on technicalities. An employee can make a personal grievance claim with the ERA if they believe their employer has acted in an unfair or unreasonable manner without having to discuss it with their employer or going to mediation. So you can make your first step, the claim, go straight to lodging a PG. If you haven't tried using mediation to solve your problem, the ERA may suggest that you do try it. Even if you have tried, they may suggest that you try it again if they feel that the problem might be resolved. To make a claim, you need to follow the steps on the ERA website. As always, I'll put links to it on the episode page at pawsclawswetnoses.fm. Remember, this is episode 58. And to start the process, it's just under $100. You'll need a RealMe login. As I said earlier, timing is crucial. A PG must be raised with your employer within 90 days of when the personal grievance arose or first came to your attention, whichever is the later. For example, if an employee is fired, they've got 90 days from the end of their employment to raise their grievance. You can raise a PG after the 90-day mark, but the employer needs to agree. If they don't agree, you as the employee can ask the ERA if you can raise a personal grievance. An employee can only do this if they can prove the delay was due to exceptional circumstances. And exceptional circumstances could include that the employee's representative failing to raise the grievance in time. So let's say you asked somebody to do it on your behalf, maybe a lawyer, and it wasn't done in time, that you are unable to raise a grievance due to health issues caused by the problem. The employment agreement not explaining services available for resolving problems or stating the 90-day notice period. So you need to go back to your individual employment agreement to check that. If the employer failed to provide a reason for a dismissal when you asked them to. After an employee has raised their PG, they've then got 3 years to begin proceedings in the ERA after it was first raised with the employer. Again, if this time period is blown, if you don't sort it out in 3 years, don't raise it, don't lodge it in 3 years, an employee needs permission from the ERA, and this is very rarely granted. So timing is critical. Let's say you're a vet staff locum and you're in one of those triangular employment situations I mentioned earlier. That is, you're an employee of vet staff but perform work for a vet clinic, which could then become the third party. Employees can bring a personal grievance claim against their employer. In this situation, it would be vet staff and, if relevant, the third party. So you can take it against both. That's known as the controlling third party that you work for. The third party must direct or control your day-to-day work. The third party, that's the clinic, can be added to a personal grievance claim in cases where their behaviour or actions contributed to the problem. This may include actions and behaviours like bullying, harassment, or discrimination. In this situation, the employer, us as vet staff, and the third-party clinic could both potentially be responsible for providing remedies or compensation to the employee. Employees in a triangular employment situation must apply to the Employment Relations Authority to add the controlling party to their personal grievance claim and for the remedies to be divided among the responsible parties, that's the agency and the controlling third party. Also, be aware that employers, for example, vet staff as the agency, can also apply to the ERA to add the controlling party to the personal grievance claim and for compensation to be divided up by the responsible parties, the agency and the controlling third party. So that's a top-level overview of personal grievances. Now, let's look at what workplace bullying is again. From the top level, because constructive dismissal and personal grievances and workplace bullying are usually, sadly, all intertwined. Workplace bullying is repeated and unreasonable behaviour directed towards an employee or a group of employees that can cause physical or mental harm. Bullying can be physical, verbal, psychological, or social. It can include victimizing, humiliating, intimidating, or threatening a person. A single or occasional incident of insensitive or rude behavior towards another person isn't considered workplace bullying, but it could become more serious and it shouldn't be ignored. Bullying doesn't just happen in a top-down situation of, say, a lead vet or a head nurse or a practice manager to the direct reports. It can also happen among co-workers, contractors, customers, clients, or visitors. Employers have legal obligations to make sure that their workers are healthy and safe at work. This includes managing the risks of bullying at work. Keep in mind, if bullying causes physical harm, this can be a criminal offence which should be reported to the police. Of course, if things get out of control and you're in immediate danger, please dial 111. If you feel like you're being bullied, double check that you're not being super sensitive and ask someone you trust whom you work with whether they agree with you. Some signs of bullying at work may include you being excluded from team meetings or activities. You could say, you know, am I imagining this? Is it happening? They'll let you know. Someone consistently taking credit for your work. Someone spreading false rumors about you. Someone swearing or yelling at you. To be considered workplace bullying, these types of behavior need to be repeated and unreasonable. If it's agreed, or you think, that what you're experiencing is bullying, find out whether your clinic has relevant workplace policies or processes around bullying prevention and/or reporting, and then follow those SOPs. Your clinic may be big enough to have someone trained on staff or at head office, or a health and safety rep in clinic who knows how to deal with the situation. If there are no relevant workplace policies or processes, you can choose one of the following approaches. If there are no SOPs or guidelines for you to follow, then you have two choices. Deal with it yourself. Speak to the person concerned. You could do that privately or at work. You're entitled to have a support person present too, by the way. Of course, if you're taking a support person to a bullying situation, then be prepared for them, the bully, to play the victim card. You and your friend are ganging up on them and or you surprise them. So be prepared for some pretty yucky passive-aggressive behaviour. Always keep notes of who said what, so you've got a record of what took place. You may need to use these further down the track. Actually, you probably will need to use them further down the track. The other thing that you could do is ask your manager to informally step in on your behalf. If the bully is your manager, then you can ask another manager or someone from HR or your practice manager to step in, or your health and safety rep if you have one. WorkSafe has, the government department WorkSafe, has some bullying reporting and assessment forms you can download for free from their website. And that website is worksafe.gov.nz. As always, I'll put links to them on at pauseclausewetnoses.fm. And remember, you're listening to episode 58. So those are bullying reporting and assessment forms that you can use. Managers involved need to be clear on what actually happened. Otherwise, a formal investigation may need to be carried out to be fair to the person accused of bullying. Remember, in New Zealand, someone is always innocent until proven guilty. If the behaviour continues, you may choose to make a formal complaint. So let's be clear. Workplace bullying does not include one-off or occasional instances of forgetfulness, rudeness, or tactlessness, setting high performance standards, constructive feedback and legitimate advice or peer review, a manager requiring reasonable verbal or written work instructions to be carried out, warning or disciplining workers in line with the business or undertaking's code of conduct, a single incident of unreasonable behavior, reasonable management actions delivered in a reasonable way, and differences in opinion or personality clashes that do not escalate into bullying, harassment, or violence. Bullying in the workplace can include, remember, we're talking repeated and unreasonable behavior directed towards a worker or a group of workers that can lead to physical or psychological harm. Repeated behaviour is persistent, that is, it occurs more than once and can involve a range of actions over time. Unreasonable behaviour means actions that a reasonable person in the same circumstances would see as unreasonable. It includes victimising, humiliating, intimidating or threatening a person. It may also include harassment, discrimination or violence. Bullying can be carried out in a variety of ways, including email, text messaging, internet chat rooms, or other social media channels, and that's called cyberbullying. It can also occur inside and outside work hours. There are different types of bullying. Some are personal attacks, while others can be task-oriented or task-related, and they are indirect. Some personal and direct attacks can include belittling remarks, undermining your integrity, lies being told, sense of judgment being questioned, and opinions marginalized. You could be ignored or excluded, or be on the end of silent treatment or isolated. attacking a person's beliefs, attitude, lifestyle, or appearance, gender references, accusations of being mentally disturbed, ridiculing, insulting, teasing, jokes, funny surprises, and sarcasm, being shouted at or yelled at, threats of violence, insulting comments about one's private life, physical attacks, humiliation in public or in private, persistent and or public criticism, using obscene or offensive language, gestures or material, ganging up, where colleagues and clients are encouraged to criticize or spy or witch hunt, dirty tricks, campaigns, being singled out, intimidation, that means acting in a condescending manner, intruding on privacy, for example, spying, stalking, being harassed by calls when you're on leave or at the weekends, unwanted sexual approaches, offers or physical contact, verbal abuse, inaccurate accusations, suggestive glances, gestures or dirty looks, tampering with personal effects or theft or destruction of property, or encouraged to feel guilty. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about being yelled at and screamed at. I had a job once. I was a practice manager of a law firm, and the principal was, he just used to go insane the whole time. He would yell and scream and have these. He acted his shoe size, not his age, and would have, he just temper tantrums. And it turns out, unbeknown to us and unbeknown to him, that he was diabetic. He had type 2 diabetes. When we worked out that we could, or he worked out, when his doctor told him to level his, get his glucose under control, he was this whole new person. And all the yelling and screaming stopped. So just throw that one in there, just because I could. Now, task-related attacks or indirect attacks could include giving unachievable tasks, impossible deadlines, unmanageable workloads, overloading, and where somebody is set up to fail, meaningless tasks, unpleasant jobs, belittling a person's ability and undermining someone, withholding or concealing information, or information goes missing, failing to return calls or to pass on messages, undervaluing contribution, no credit where it's due, taking credit for work that's not their own, constant criticism of work, underwork, working below competence, removing responsibility or demotion, unreasonable or inappropriate monitoring, offensive sanctions, for example, denying leave where there is no reason to do so, excluding, isolating, ignoring somebody's views, changing the goalposts or targets, not giving enough training or resources, so you're setting somebody up to fail there, reducing opportunities for expression, interrupting when speaking, supplying incorrect or unclear information, making hints or threats about job security, no support from a manager, scapegoating, denial of opportunity, judging wrongly, forced or unjustified disciplinary hearings, lack of role clarity, not trusting, and then sabotage. Those are long lists. So bullying is very extensive. Remember, please, it's the employer's responsibility to keep its employees safe from harm. If it looks like constructive dismissal is going to down at your place, please do something about it. The least you can do is offer support to the person on the receiving end so they know they're not alone and not going crazy by imagining things. If you know bullying is taking place, likewise, please do something about it. If you're a vet med professional listening to this podcast, you'll know as well as I do that suicide is rife in this sector. None of us are mind readers. Believe me, it's nice to know that people appreciate you for going in to bat for them. But there's nothing more frustrating after someone's taken the fall when others come out of the woodwork and say how much they appreciate what the person did. We can't read minds. So tell people that you appreciate them. By then, if we don't do that, by then it's too late. So please stand up. How would you feel if someone you worked with decided that they'd had enough? And I mean enough, enough. You kept meaning to tell them that you were on their side, but you didn't, and then it became too late. Years ago, I came across a poem, and it stuck with me for centuries. Well, stuck with me for a long time. I want to read it to you now because I think it's poignant. It's written by Charles Hanson Towne, who was born in Kentucky back in 1877. It's in the public domain, and it's called Around the Corner. Around the corner I had a friend in this great city that had no end. Yet days go by and weeks rush on, and before I know it, a year is gone. And I never see my old friend's face, for life is a swift and terrible race. He knows I like him just as well as in the days when I rang his bell and he rang mine. We were younger then, and now we are busy, tired men, tired with playing a foolish game, tired with trying to make a name. Tomorrow, I say, I will call on Jim, just to show that I'm thinking of him. But tomorrow comes and tomorrow goes, and the distances between us grows and grows, around the corner, yet miles away. Here's a telegram, sir. Jim died today. And that's what we get and deserve in the end. Around the corner, a vanished friend. Please, don't let the sun go down another day on a friend you're thinking of calling. I want to finish on a positive note, and that's to tell you about the two beliefs which govern everything that we do at VetStaff. The first is that all VetMed professionals deserve to work in the clinic of their dreams where they're respected and valued. And the second belief is that employers of choice deserve to attract and have the best, highly motivated, proactive, enthusiastic, and engaged professionals working for them. I know there are some recruiters who would sell their own grandmother to an employer that would make her life miserable. That's not us. Believe it or not, there are, sadly, vet clinics in New Zealand that we won't work with, no matter how much they've paid us, because of how they treat their teams. Unfortunately, that list is growing. As I said, here at VetStaff, we believe that all VetMed professionals deserve to work in the clinic of their dreams, where they're respected and valued, and that employers of choice deserve to attract and have the best, highly motivated, proactive, enthusiastic, and engaged professionals working for them. If, knowing that, you'd like to work with us, then let's chat. Thank you for listening. Remember to click that follow button and the bell, if there is one, wherever you listen to your favourite podcast, so you never miss out on future episodes. This is Julie South signing off and wishing you a fantabulous day so that you can go out and be the most amazing version of you that you can be. Ka kite ono, take care, God bless. Paws, Claws and Wet Noses is sponsored by VetStaff. If you've never heard of VetStaff, it's New Zealand's only full-service recruitment agency, 100% dedicated to the veterinary sector. VetStaff has been around since 2015 and works nationwide, from Cape Reinga to the Bluff and everywhere in between. As well as helping Kiwis, VetStaff also helps overseas qualified veterinarians find work in Aotearoa, New Zealand. VetStaff.co.nz